and welcome back to Casting Nets Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Will Harley, joined with the bald and beautiful and looking like more of a full goatee beard, Don Winsberger. And so we do welcome you to the podcast. Don, I know none of us want to hear what you have to say, but why don't you just say hi so everyone knows that you are here and it's not just a figment of my imagination.
Yes, I'd like to say hi to all of our listeners. You know, right now with the social distancing and the isolation things, pastors, we're really, really feeling out of sorts with all of the, online streaming services and stuff, looking at this technology. And just to express how I think all of us clergy feel, I'd like to quote the world-renowned famous poet Joe Walsh, who says this: "Welcome to cyberspace. I'm lost in the fog. Everyone's digital. I'm still analog. When something goes wrong, I don't know what to do. Some 10-year-old wiseacre has to tell me what to do." On that, I'll hand it over to you.
Well, I appreciate the social distancing. For you and I, socially, if we get close, our language isn't always the grandest, and it usually degrades itself to fart jokes. And so maybe it's a good thing.
It's still good humor.
It's still good humor. So we're here. Before we jump on into our topic and before we introduce some of our guests for our show today, we do want to give you our disclaimer that the ramblings and the thoughts that we express are not the thoughts that are from our organizations that employ us. They're not the thoughts necessarily of the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. And so please bear all that in mind. If it is something that we say that's offensive or you don't appreciate, you can turn us off because it's just a podcast. And if you'd like to have a conversation with us and join us for a conversation, please contact us through our webpage or through our churches and let us know that you would like to talk more about these subjects. So without further ado, we're going to have a little bit of a side intro as we move our way into meeting some new friends and getting into our topic for the day. All right, we are back, and we are joined today with some wonderful new friends. I have the opportunity of working with both of them, one on evangelism board and within the church. The other, I have an opportunity of working as part of the faculty at St. John's here in Maribel. And so I'd like to give a shout out and say welcome to our principal at St. John Maribel School, Phil Hochmuth, and his wife, Keturah. She doesn't look like she's there right yet, so she probably just stepped out of the room. But Phil, how about you say hi to everybody?
Hello, everybody.
He's a man of many words. He is a man of many words. We're welcoming them both to the show, and I think Keturah is here now, so if she would like to say hi, she can certainly say hi.
She's coming downstairs shortly. So
okay, well, when she gets here, we'll make sure that she has an opportunity to say hi. For our listeners, before we jump into the topic, Phil, how about you give us just a little bit of history of who you are and how you got here?
Okay, who I am. I'm Phil, and I went to MLC and went through the teacher track there, and then was assigned to Christ St. Peter Lutheran School in Milwaukee in 2003. Maybe even take a step back. My parents are both Wells teachers. I was born in Omaha, and then we moved to Austin, Texas, and then from there my dad took a call to Luther Prep. And then about 5 years ago I had a call to St. John and Maribel to teach 6th, 7th, 8th grade and be athletic director. And after a couple of years, the principal there had decided to take a call to another school, to Toma. And so then the congregation asked if I want to be principal, and I said, sure.
And next to him is his lovely bride, Keturah, if you'd like to say hi and introduce maybe yourself a little bit.
Okay, hi. let's see. I don't know. I was born in Arizona. My dad is a pastor, so I'm a dreaded PK. Then he took a call to Michigan. I grew up there, went to Michigan Lutheran Seminary, went to MLC, met Phil, and I've kind of taught all over. So emergency taught Nina. And then I went to Columbus, Wisconsin, and then taught at Mount Lebanon in Milwaukee, and then Christ St. Peter at Milwaukee, and now I'm teaching at Bethany in Manitowoc. And we have three great children. Yes. That's about it. I'm not really important.
There we go. I'm Pat Shuffle.
Well, there you go. Well, we're glad to have you with us as we talk about a very important topic. Don and I had sort of been amping up on our discussions on the roles of men and women and dealing with how it is that we work together in God's kingdom. And so now we have a good opportunity to start diving in to a document that was put out by the COP, which is the Conference of Presidents of the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. And it is a document that they sort of put together to give some good clarification, better clarification. Would you say better clarification, Don?
I think it's better clarification. This is something that there was a study that was put out about three decades ago. As time has gone on, there have, you know, things go in cycles. And in our synod, this matter has come up once again to clarify, because we've got people that have questions, concerns, wanting to follow God's word, and yet carry out fruitful ministry. I think we saw some of this when we were at Chicago about a month ago, and there was a seminar and a class, or actually a presentation that was put on. And you and I, while it was a wonderful presentation, you and I, and we weren't the only pastors that felt that presentation was a little bit stretched, so to speak. And what I mean by stretched, it was, I don't even think that the speakers were comfortable with the subject.
I would agree. I would agree. It's an amazing thing that people aren't comfortable talking about how men and women sort of have to work together. You know, Phil, you and I on the phone earlier, you know, we just had a little chuckle how sometimes we forget to tell our wives what's going on. And I'm sure it happens the other way too. Our wives forget to tell us what's going on, but they think they have, man, you know, it's a good topic for us to be talking about. How do we work together and struggling through maybe some applications, which I think is what this Bible study that they put out is supposed to do, right? Maybe get us to think about how does this whole thing work together, and how does it all sort of flow together, and how are we supposed to work within the sphere? And so it was important for Don and I to get some other input into this. And so we did invite Phil to join us, and we invited his wife Keturah to join us because we invited Phil because he's married to Keturah, and we really wanted her opinion because she's a lady.
I was going to say, I don't want to give Phil a hard time, too much of a hard time. I don't know him that well, but I look for maybe we'll get him on a few more podcasts with us. One of the things that I really wanted to, Keturah, one of the things that Pastor Harley, as he and I talked about this, we really wanted to have a female's vantage point of this. What our Lutheran women are looking for in their marriages, in their relationships with men in their congregation. And even, you know, I think this is something appropriate too, as you look at with your male counterparts in the teaching ministry. I am looking for what are your expectations? What are our women's expectations of us men?
You want me to answer that?
If you'd like to, I mean, you don't have to. I mean, I'm sorry for putting you on the spot. I mean, you don't have to answer right now, but I'm looking at in the in the course of us as we're working with through this, no matter how many podcasts it takes us to go through, I'm really looking forward to your input on these things.
Okay. I don't know what to say right now.
That's okay.
Okay. Because, I mean, I would be talking forever if you want to know exactly, you know, what I would
but
like.
We want to hear exactly what's on your mind.
That's what makes this podcast fun. So,
yes.
I don't have, okay. I don't know. I guess as a wife, I mean, it's more, okay, I like to, I talk a lot. Like, I mean, I vent a lot to my husband, and you guys, your wives probably do that too, maybe. I don't know, I just need someone to listen and to not really, actually to show me that they're listening and not just looking at me where I think they're listening. I mean, I know when he's not listening to me. That drives me crazy. you know what I mean? Like
No, I
there.
Don't. I wasn't listening. I'm sorry.
See, exactly. I don't know. There's part of that. I mean, communication is not, I think, our strong point. I don't know, Phil, if you agree on that one, but I think we assume that each other knows something. And I don't know if that's a guy thing. Yes, it's a guy thing. It drives me crazy.
Well,
I mean, I don't like
just
him assuming that it's no.
just as a little added caveat, you know, Phil, we were just in church and we just talked about Martha, who kind of left information out when she was telling Jesus, you know, anything that you ask God for, he's going to give to you, which was really, she was saying, I want you to ask for my brother back, but she never said it, but she implied it. Is that kind of one of those same sometimes? Yeah.
Sometimes, or it's just assumed that she knows and, or, you know, whatever it might be.
Sure. Sure. Well, continue, please. I didn't mean to interrupt. Well, I did, but.
Write it all out. I don't know, I'm trying to think. What else? I guess it kind of, and even with teaching, I mean, I have a principal, you know, he's a man. And I feel bad for him because there's a lot of women on faculty. But I think that happens in the teaching ministry. You do have a lot of females on your staff. I mean, that's just what happens. But something might be bothering us. And if we do talk to him about it, it kind of gets pushed aside, like it's not a big deal. And I feel that with you too, no offense, but to us it is a big deal. I mean, just because maybe I'm having struggles with a certain student, but in his brain it's being handled since I've talked to him about it, but it really isn't. And then I keep going back to him about certain things, or the females might, or a certain topic, and we feel like it's not getting done because we want things done right away, not just I'll push that off later. No, let's talk about it now. Let me talk about it. Don't push it off. Don't listen. Like, it sounds terrible if I say don't listen like a man, but I have to keep talking about it all the time. I need to bring it up until it's solved. I need to see results like right away. I know it sounds really impatient. I don't know how to explain it really well.
Well, no, it's an interesting thing that you say that, because you know that. And funny, and we have three guys on the panel here. We have so on this conversation, but guys excel at trying to fix problems, and we just choose different. Apparently, we choose differently the priority of which problems we should choose to fix at what time, because the problems that we think are the ones that need to be fixed are the ones that our wives are saying, "I didn't want you to fix it. I just wanted you to listen." And
right.
The ones that that they wanted us to actually fix, we kind of missed and thought, well, I thought we just wanted us to listen.
Right. And the thing that bugs me, one of the most things that bothers me, like if I have family coming over, or people are coming to our house, I need help, right? I need help cleaning the house. And then he'll just look at me and he'll say, what do you want me to do? I hate that question. I hate, what do you want me to do? No, I need you to look around and just do it. Like in my brain, why do I have to tell you what to do? Look, there's dishes on the countertop. Do that. You know what I mean?
Did you talk to my wife since last night, Kapoor?
Oh, it drives me crazy. Yes. Or like if a kid is crying in the middle of the night, I was already up with them. How do you not hear them?
We have selective hearing. It is a God-given gift that he has bestowed upon men, that we can selectively shut off our hearing and sleep through children's crying and things of that nature.
Yeah. I as his wife, I don't want to nag all the time. I don't want to nag my principal. So, you know, we kind of sit back like, oh, we don't want to be nagging because society, I think, kind of paints wives in a bad picture that way, is being naggy, naggy, naggy. So if we do say, hey, can you do the dishes, or this needs to get done, or this kid is acting up, I feel like he might think I'm nagging. And I'm just saying, hey, you're not doing this right now. Why can't you do this? I'm not trying to nag, but I don't know if it's making any sense.
Oh, no.
It's making complete sense to me.
Okay.
But he thinks like a woman, so that would probably work. He's quite recently, his wife has beaten it into him, his emotions. And so he's really in touch with his emotions now.
I don't know. Yeah.
Because of you, I'm glad that she does not listen to this podcast.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's good for my health and his.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know. Now I feel like I'm bashing all you guys, but I'm
no, no. I think thank you, Keturah, because I think some of this comes. You know, I look at. As you're talking about, I want somebody who listens. And this is one thing I'm guilty of. My wife starts talking to me and the problem solver in me immediately kicks in. And so I'm not even listening to what she says to me. I'm immediately trying to solve the problem. Right there. Mistake, big mistake number one. Another thing too, where I really understand it is, when I asked you, did you talk to my wife since last night? We had a very spirited discussion last night about this very subject. And I, you know, once again, shamefully, I have to say, I know what to do. My mother raised me better, and my sinful nature will take advantage of that.
Well, it seems like there is a need then for us to maybe have this conversation, at least to start this conversation and talk about what are the shared gifts that God has given to us as men and women, and then also maybe talk about how some of that has gotten maybe skewed or lost, and how we can reclaim some of these wonderful things that God has intended for us to have. We know in Scripture, and we're going to be going over that here in this first lesson, of course, as well, that God never intended for man to be alone, that God's intention was for man and woman to work seamlessly together in this relationship we called marriage, right? And in this thing we call society, that they were going to work alongside of each other as helper, helpmate. And unfortunately, just in the conversations that we've had in the beginning of the podcast here, all of us can agree that it's not working the way that it was intended. It's not functioning the way that God had wanted it to function. It's not doing the things that God had intended it for it to be. Now, that doesn't say that there aren't wonderful parts of marriage. I mean, we've all been married long enough to know that marriage is the greatest gift outside of salvation in Christ Jesus that God has given to us each. I mean, children are maybe a close third. Maybe. Depend on the day. But at least our marriages are such a wonderful gift, right? Our marriages are such a wonderful thing because they are for this life, for us to share in, right? So how are we going to make this work a little bit better? I think that's a pretty good segue, unless any of you have any other comments you want to just throw in there before we start looking at the Bible study and open up this idea to maybe more study, more discussion. Anything you guys want to add? Yeah, we're good. All right. Well, we are looking at the first lesson here in the Bible study that the COP put out that deals with this. The study, lesson one, is shared gifts belonging to male and female in creation. So sort of the idea of what do we have in common? And let's start with what we have in common, and then we work out what we have that is different maybe, and then work on how we bring this all together. So if we were going to take a look at this first part, creation in God's creation in God's image, how we are created to be in this image and we'll probably discuss what that image is of God. We have Genesis chapter 1, 26 and 28. I don't have my physical Bible with me, but I do have one that's online, so I'll quickly read it for us. 26 and 28 of Genesis chapter 1, God said, "Let us make man in our image according to our likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, over the livestock, over all the earth, over every creeping thing that crawls on the earth." And God created the man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male, female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, subdue it, have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the sky, and over every living thing that moves on the earth." So we have this wonderful pinnacle of creation, right? Usually when I teach this, and Don, I don't know if you teach it the same way, but usually when I teach this, I say, you know, all before this, God creates what we call the circle of life, right? We have this circle, you know, we have all the animals, and each animal does its own thing, and we have all these plants, and the plants are food for all these other animals. And then what stands outside of that circle? It's the pinnacle of his creation, which is Adam and Eve, right? Man and woman. The pinnacle of that creation outside of that circle, to have dominion over that circle, to have management of that circle together, this beautiful gift. I don't know how else you teach it, Don. That's pretty much.
I teach it the right way, but you eventually get there.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. You just keep saying that. You've only been married 5 years. We'll see how that turns out for you.
I'm still alive and breathing. I'm considering that a plus.
You should. So looking at where Moses is inspired and he writes this testimony to God's delighting in creating human beings as the crown and the focus of his entire creation activity. Where are you seeing this inspiration or this delight from those verses? What do you think? What kind of things are said? That's sort of what is looking for. In Moses' inspired account, do you see that testimony that God is delighting in this creation?
He's giving man one thing that jumped out at me, and I don't know if this is necessarily significant or not. Male and female, he created them, fill the earth and subdue it, the things with creation, the blessings of creation. He gives both of them dominion over it.
That's interesting to me because you have that idea of dominion being shared, right?
Yes.
So, Phil, sorry, housework is shared.
I guess I'll have to be okay then.
The dishwasher, and I appreciate that because I hate that. But
there you go, Phil. You have dominion over the dishwasher. But you see the attention that he is giving, and I think Don, you brought it out so beautifully, the attention that's given to the shared responsibility in creation and in now living and breathing and doing these things, that's going to be given to Adam and Eve, both of them, as they have this opportunity.
Could I ask a question here? It's usually something that I'll ask married couples, or, you know, actually couples looking to get married. Are there specific, you know, as we look at this dominion and the shared responsibilities, are there male jobs and female jobs? Are there male responsibilities and female responsibilities? And we're going to be getting to somewhere we'll see there are some strictly male responsibilities, but looking in the household, looking at the things that need to be done, are there male and female jobs?
I want to say yes.
I'm not trying to get you into trouble, Phil.
No, that's fine. I want to say yes. I mean, I know that there's the spiritual component, you know, so I'm going to go there. But as far as like the day to day, like typical things in the house, I'd be hard pressed to give an absolute. Because I think that varies, because you hear of different couples who, it depends on the gifts that God has given them. I hear of, in our house, at least as far as paying the bills and stuff like that, that kind of falls on me.
But, I don't do math.
Well, there you have it. And then other households, you hear of the wife being the one who takes care of all the bills and takes care of that type of stuff.
I don't do math, but I've got a wonderful bride that takes care of that for me, and I'm grateful to her for that.
Right. And in some households, the husband can cook like you wouldn't believe. I can get you a frozen pizza and a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and some spaghetti. But doing anything past that, good luck. But in some places, in some households, the wife can do all the cooking. So I think on the day-to-day stuff, I think it just kind of depends. I think the best thing would be is that the communication, which we talked about, which maybe we don't do the greatest all the time, but communicate about those jobs and then work together to assist each other to help those jobs, whatever those jobs may be and whatever the breakdown may be, for what it's worth.
So maybe there's some, from what I'm hearing is being sort of said, is that each person has a different set of gifts and each person uses those gifts differently. Don, you don't have the gift of balancing the budget, but you know, Laura does, and she does it very, very well. That doesn't mean that there's the spiritual component, the headship helper idea is being circumvented or anything. It just means that you're allowing the gifts that God has given to each person to shine through in their daily life, in however you're doing that. I would bring up, though, that I think society would differ from how you are interpreting this or how Phil's answer. You look at, just go back into Genesis, in the accounts of Genesis, you see Jacob and Esau, right? We know Jacob and Esau. Isaac, he loves Esau. Why? Because Esau does manly things and Jacob does womanly things. He stays at home. He knows how to sew. He knows how to cook and he cooks very, very well. But Isaac kind of doesn't really like Esau as much because he's kind of more of the womanly, geared towards the womanly things. So I think our society places labels on what, and maybe that's part of the problem too, that our society places labels on what is considered to be manly or for the man and for the woman.
Is that changing more today, Will? I mean, you know, not wanting to throw a monkey wrench into the gear system here, but as we look at things like, transgenderism, I can choose what gender that I want to identify with. We really have, I'm not saying this is society as a whole, but now we have a segment of society that's really trying to blur gender differences too.
And I would agree with that. I guess my comment on that would be, has some of the problem of what we, I'm not, I mean, it's a whole other can of worms to talk about the other trans, those issues, the transgender issues and things like that. But maybe, I think if you want to go back just a step and just say, okay, feminism and everything that's coming through with the feminist movement and their desire to create equality in the workforce between men and women, their desire to have equal pay for equal job, those types of things. I honestly think those are a result of misinterpretation of roles in the past, as opposed to trying to avoid the equilibrium that God has created. Does that make sense?
And does it, really, no matter what vantage point you come or you approach this to from it, in reality, it comes down to this, no matter what, it still looks at what are your gifts and abilities, no matter male or female, we have different strengths and different weaknesses. And there's communication about how we deal with that. Let me give you an example. Thankfully, most of my relatives don't listen to our podcast, so I can get by with this. But I have a great aunt who now is about approaching 90. And let's put it this way. I'm 6'4" right now, weigh about 290 pounds. Even in my days when I was in a lot better shape, this woman put the physical fear of God into me because she could have manhandled me. I think she still can. She definitely could manhandle her husband, okay? But those two, they would, as they communicated in their marriage, how do I say this? There were things that he did that weren't traditional male roles, and there were a lot of things that she did that weren't traditional female roles because they had different abilities and strengths, physical and emotional, whatever.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair assessment. So you're saying that in that relationship, he probably washed the dishes?
Yeah, if he knew what was good for him.
Sorry, Phil, I'm just going to keep coming back to that.
And I'm not coming after Phil on this one. This is my, and I love this woman. She's been almost as much of a blessing to me as my mother was. This woman, when she told you to do something, she had the physical imposing presence to scare you into doing it. And that's just all I was saying there.
Well, let's dive a little bit more into this. Something to keep in mind that God now created them and you have dominion, right? A shared dominion over this creation. Looking a little bit deeper into going through our study and looking just maybe a little bit deeper itself into the gifts that are given to us, the study has us reading Genesis chapter 2 and looking at 18 through 25. And if you know the beginning of the scriptures, 18 through 25 is really the creation of woman in more of a broader detail, right? God gives us in chapter 1 the overview of how wonderful and good all of this creation is. In chapter 2, he sort of narrows it down, and he's now going to be very specific. 18 through 25, he says, "And the Lord God said, 'It's not good for man to be alone. I'll make a helper who is suitable partner for him.' Out of the soil, the Lord God had formed every wild animal, every bird of the sky, and he brought them to the man to see what he would call them. Whatever the man called every living creature, that became its name, and the man gave names to all the livestock, to the birds of the sky, to every wild animal. But for Adam, no helper was found who was a suitable partner. The Lord God caused the man to fall into a deep sleep. As the man slept, the Lord God took a rib, closed up the flesh where it had been, and the Lord God built a woman from the rib that had been taken from the man and brought her to the man. And the man said, 'Now this one is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She will be called woman because she was taken out of man. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and will remain united with his wife, and they will become one flesh, and they were both naked, and the man and his wife, and they were not ashamed.'" And so we have some wonderful gifts that are given here. And maybe it's just me. I usually have a tendency when I teach this to highlight the slowness of man, even in creation. The Lord makes him have every single animal come before him before man realizes what God already knew, that it wasn't suitable for man to be alone, and that man didn't have a suitable partner for him. And it takes man all the animals to go through to finally maybe realize that, oh, wait, there's no one who's just like me. And then the Lord provides one in such a beautiful way. Some of the questions that are asked in the study that maybe we want to pursue is, in these verses, where can we see the beauty of God, of the gift of God's image in Adam's thoughts and actions? Where can you see the beauty? What do you think? I have my answer. I know that.
the fact that I think this is a lesson that's appropriate with what we're going through nationwide right now, God just doesn't give Adam Eve. He leads him to an appreciation. And I think Adam got that right away. I think God's intended purpose of doing that was successful. He just didn't say, here she is. He led Adam to see, I'm alone, this stinks. And then no wonder he says, after God brings her to him, this is now bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh. He's ecstatic.
Yeah.
And that's beauty.
Probably first poetry, at least, if not song, recorded for us in the Old Testament. Just beautiful words as he sings over his wife. I can't imagine the last time I sang over my wife. I don't know if we do that anymore. Keep it clean.
You always take us places we don't need to go.
But it is something I think that needs to be said, though, because just because we're no longer in this perfect state that Adam and Eve were in, doesn't mean that there is not a value or that we can't find the value in the life partner, in our wives, in our spouse, or for our wives or the husband that the Lord has provided. And I've challenged myself, I know, in numerous times for special times of the year, like for the 12 days of Christmas, just writing 12 different letters, highlighting every little thing that I thought was special that I couldn't live without from my wife, and then giving it to her one each of those days.
Okay, this is good for Phil to hear this.
They weren't very good. Because after like number five, you're like, what else is there? And there's so much more. I mean, it really gets you to think. It really gets you to think about even the most unique little things that you couldn't live without. I mean, I think I'd like the last one. I'd have to go back and look. But if I remember correctly, that on number 12, it was something that just drives me nuts that she does all the time. Like, I can't even remember. But it was something so minute, but I know it drives me nuts. And, oh, yeah, now I remember. It was her cold feet. It seemed so absurd. It seemed so absurd. But it was, you know, she comes in and she goes, my feet are cold. And I know. She'd be like, oh, I'm going to touch my leg with her cold feet. And then she'd be like, oh, but you're so warm. I'm like, I was until you had to go and touch me with your cold feet. But thinking about that, you know, that's a part of this beautiful relationship that I have with her. And that is something that is, I can imagine Adam as he's seeing all of the animals come behind or come through, and he just looks and he says, there's no one who's like me, who shares what I share and has what I have. There's a beauty in that.
If there's something to be said, looking at it maybe in a modern day type of situation too, yeah. I happen to observe over longer than three decades. Men, when their wives are not around, go insane. Going back 30 years ago, when my mother had to go work out of state for a temporary time, my dad he was beside himself, didn't know what to do. I've seen it when, in cases of divorce, the husband seems to have a much more difficult time of trying to deal with life alone. Whereas women, when the husband's not, and I'm not saying, I firmly believe that for women, it's not good for the woman to be alone either.
But they can manage it a lot better.
Women handle it a lot better. Any insight on that?
I was
sorry, there's a little background noise over here.
Sorry, I wasn't listening.
No, but what was that last question? Do you have a question?
Well, any insight into it? Why does it seem to be that women handle the solitude better than the men do? At least that's just something I've observed.
Boy, this is going to sound stereotypical.
I'm going to say social.
Fine, you can go social, but I mean, even like think of like the basics of like food, or you know, of and I know it's going to sound stereotypical, but who's typically making all the food and doing that type of stuff? Well, in theory, in some most cases, it's the woman. So, and maybe it's the social part too. And whereas if a guy, if he's here all by himself, like, well, get home, and if the wife has been making the food, well, now what? You know, and maybe it's stereotypical, but maybe there's part of that, those roles that.
Well, men always think they're okay too.
Well, there's that too.
If I didn't schedule your doctor's appointments or tell you you need to go see a doctor, you wouldn't.
There's that too.
Or like my dad. I mean, my parents, they're awesome, but he had this like something with his leg and he wasn't going in. My mom's a nurse and she kept yelling at him. And finally, he hit it with a weed whacker. And had to go in, and they found, like, I don't know exactly what it was, but if he wouldn't have gone, I mean, he would have gone in sooner, this would have been taken care of, but it took a weed whacker, and he wasn't even go in with the weed whacker, he was just going to say, I'll bandage it up and we'll go, but he was bleeding pretty badly, and if my mom would have made him go in, you know, I mean, he's just like a Mr. Tough Guy, I'm fine, I'll slap a Band-Aid on under dirt, and we'll keep going, even though it was an artery that he had hit. You know, I mean,
and I'm going to make one more comment. I think what Keturah was saying about the social part too. I mean, who's in charge of our social calendar? It's Keturah. She says, hey, we're going to such and such place. I'm like, okay. Otherwise I'd just be sitting at home all the time doing
watching sports
or whatever. But in the fact that she's talking to so-and-so and, oh, hey, we got, there's a birthday party for so-and-so or there's this, hey, we're going. Okay. You know, and you just kind of leave it up to her to arrange that. And then you go and, hey, I was talking to so-and-so and you had a nice conversation. Wouldn't have had that because I would have been staying home watching the paint dryer, watching sports.
I just had this thought and please, Couture, maybe correct me, Phil, correct me, anybody, it doesn't matter. Is it possible that women are just more adaptable than men? I mean, men are like the running trend is that a single guy dies earlier than a married guy. And I'm wondering if it's, you know, it could be health. I'm sure all that, but is it because like you kind of said, Phil, or Couture, you'd said like your dad, we're like a fast burning flame. We just kind of keep going until we've used up everything and we're done. And ladies are kind of more like, we're a little bit more conservative in how we burn and sort of in the idea that they put a damper sort of on them. And I don't want to say damper because that makes it sound really bad, but they put a sort of damper on the men and say, stop, you need to stop, sort of holding us back so that we don't burn out. You
they
know,
domesticate us. You've made that statement before.
Well, yeah.
When I look at life before being married, the things that I did to not be alone probably weren't always the healthiest, maybe the most wise. And you know, let's put it this way: I had a lot of fun, you know. But you can only chase so many pheasants, so many deer, so many turkey, and so many walleye before that gets boring too. And it's wonderful to be able to come home to a not empty house.
Yeah.
And you know, and it, so I think there too, there's so many positive things that come to us through that companionship. That, you know, once again, it's not good. It's not good for the man to be alone. It's good to have it's good to have a mate. That's such a positive thing. But once again, it seems, and this is a compliment to women. They handle this, at least it appears they handle the separation better than we do. I can't get away from that.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. Do you handle it better?
Maybe it's because of this. I mean, maybe this is where I irritated the devil out of my wife last night, where I don't pick up after myself, and everybody else in the household is doing that after me. But because is there some of this because of being wife and mom? And really, you're the straw that makes the household, you're the straw that stirs the household drink. There are so many things, whether hubby's there or not, that you have to do. You don't have time to sit and dwell on things. Is there something with that?
I'm trying to think of, well, us. If you compare, I mean, I'm extremely impulsive. Phil sits back and kind of takes everything in and analyzes every little thing, and it drives me crazy. But where I'll see something and I just do it, and I go, and it drives him crazy because I don't think. I mean, I do think, but I'm really impulsive, and probably more so than a lot of women are. But I take after my mom in that. So I don't know, but I do know too, if I'm not here, if he doesn't have school and the kids don't have school and I do, I'll come home and the kids might have their pajamas on, but the hair isn't combed and like they have to have their hair combed. I mean, if I would die, I think my children, my girls would have, you know, buzz cuts because no one would be there to comb their hair and he doesn't. And it's little things like that, or, you know, they like their sandwich cut a certain way and or else they don't eat it. And he just does it. Well, no, they don't fold. It has to be folded the correct way.
I can guarantee you when they get hungry enough, they'll eat anything.
You know, but or like my kids the other night, I don't remember who it was. Dad doesn't tuck this in right. Okay. So that's another thing. Like, not that you're doing it wrong. It's just not.
It's my way.
Right. It's your way. But I don't know. I think we just, women see something needs to get done and they just do it. I mean, I will want furniture moved in the house and I will ask for a long time and it doesn't happen. So I just do it. And then he comes home and he gets mad at me. But because I got a piano stuck in the hallway.
Again, I'm not even going to comment on that one. But again, I think, but again, you know, they always used to say, and there used to be a general trend that used to say that women are nesters by and large. That women are nesters. They sort of like to have that security, and they like to find a place, and they like to sort of nestle down and stay. But I think there's an although maybe it's not in location, I think men are worse than women in many ways, in the sense that we are very much so focused on our work, our job, and our placement in the house that maybe that's the issue. When we lose those things, like when we get into older age and we retire, most men shut down because now what's their purpose? What do they do? And our wives still got a bunch of stuff on their plate because they're still looking out for grandkids and they're looking out for their own kids. And they're saying, you know, we still got places to go and people to see. And again, we're kind of like, what's my point in this or what's my place in this? And so maybe that may be some of the issue that you're seeing, why they cope with it a little bit better, because they always have a place. And we kind of have pigeonholed ourselves into thinking our place is only in this area.
Do you ever notice it, you know, here's an example. A few years ago, before I moved here to South Dakota, actually it was right after I moved to South Dakota, a couple that I used to be there or used to serve, they were both, you know, up in years. The husband, he had been in ill health for quite a while. He passed away suddenly. They're making arrangements for his funeral, and 24 hours later, his wife passes away. just died in her sleep. And I see that so often you have couples that have been together for so long, and you'll see when the Lord takes one, the other one is not far behind. It could be weeks, months. I've just observed that happening so much.
Well, they're one flesh, right?
Pardon?
They're one flesh. I mean, yes. When you lose one, I mean, in this relationship, if it's done right, and I want to emphasize that if it's done right, in this relationship, if you lose the other, you lose the most, you lose the majority of yourself, if not all of yourself.
Isn't that how Paul says, he who loves his wife loves himself?
Yes. Yes. And how in Ephesians 5, the husband lives for his wife. That's his entire being. When one is lost, I mean, you lost yourself. And I can understand that would be that's a traumatic thing. My aunt and uncle that are that same way. I mean, they met when they were 14. They've been married since they could get married. They worked together. I don't know how they worked together. That blows my mind. I love my wife. I love to come home and give her a kiss and to spend the evening watching movies or whatever with her, but I could not work with her every day for the rest of my life.
Let's be gracious to your wife that the difficulty would be hers, not yours.
Yes. Say that. Yes, okay. Because I would ask her, because it's just the opposite. I would ask her to do something and she'd be like, okay, well, we'll get to it. And it would drive me nuts. I'm fine. Just get out of my way. Let me do it. I will do it. Just go away. So
I don't analyze anything. It gets me into trouble.
But I you see these gifts, and I think this is one of the reasons why I think this study is so important. And I don't think we're going to get through all of it in our podcast here. We're not even done with the first study, and that's fine because we've had good discussion. But I think this is why it needs to be discussed, because we miss the beauty. And correct me if I'm wrong. We miss the beauty of what it is that God gave us as gift in this relationship. We're going to lose it because of the fall. That's coming up, of course, in the study. We lose everything that God sort of built into this because of the fall. But we don't even focus on it anymore. We don't. We kind of just do our own thing to the exclusion of our wives. Our wives, they want us to engage with them and to be a part of their life. And they sometimes in that pursuit nag to the exclusion of sort of pushing us away. But we're not communicating. We're not working together, right? And we're not finding ways to make this work. What was it that you found out this morning, Don, as you read your devotion? I think it's a good time to bring it up.
What really got me after the discussion that my beloved bride and I had, and she's definitely the better half.
She really is.
In the well devotion this morning, listening to the words of Jesus who says, I am among you as one who serves. And that is the role that we are to have as husbands. And that was an eye opener. It spoke to my sinful nature quite hard this morning. Just a reminder that I needed that my role is to serve, not to be picked up after.
Yeah. Well, and that goes back to the very words of the song, right? This is now bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh. She is such an integral part of me. And that as husbands, we have an opportunity now to look out for her, to serve her, right? In many ways, Keturah, I am bracing myself to be chastised. Women have an opportunity to serve their husbands too. I think that's part of it as well, that if we're both serving each other, it works, right?
Right. Well, I like how it says, you know, suitable, like a suitable helper. I mean, if I look back to the types of boys I dated in high school and college, and if I look at the girls he dated in high school and college, he's completely different than what I ever thought God wanted for me. I mean, we joke saying if we knew each other in high school, there is no way I would have even bothered to say hello to him because he was totally not my type at all. And he was apparently very quiet, but
I can't imagine that at all.
You know, it was just, I was the person in high school that just wanted to, you know, meet everybody and have fun. And he was not. So, I mean, if God would have had us meet sooner, I mean, granted, we don't know what God has in plan with that, but he can't play God. But I mean, the fact that here's someone that I never, ever thought I would have gone for, God says, no, this is the person you need. I mean, this in so much love right now, but Phil does bring me down. Like he will, I mean, I will be totally on edge and like going crazy and having, you know, just, I don't know, but, and he knows how to calm me down. He knows how to bring me back to reality. He knows how to say, hey, focus it this way. Sometimes it drives me nuts because he is super positive and looks at every angle of everything. And I'll either be, this is awesome, or this is the worst thing in the world. I mean, there's no middle ground for me. And he brings that into perspective, which I think is wonderful. I mean, God knew I needed that. And when he knows I'm frustrated, I don't sometimes have to tell him, like, if I'm frustrated with the kids, all of a sudden he's right in there taking over. Or if I notice that he's about ready to explode, for some reason, God has me be the calm one on that one. It's just amazing how that ends up working. Or if I want to go tell off somebody, he is able to, hey, hold on, let's calm down, take a breather, let's pray about it. Because I am extremely simple. Sometimes I just go out and do it without praying about it. And he's there to say, pray about it before you shoot your mouth off, you know?
Oh, see, my wife is the opposite. She steps back and smiles because she's like, oh, those are the greatest times in the world.
Well, I don't want to make it look bad. That was a conversation we had last night. I said, you know, I don't voice my opinion sometimes because I don't want people to say, oh, the principal's wife, you know, she's, you know, Phil, da da blah. So, you know, it's one of those situations too where you know, thankfully he does say, hey, let's focus on this and don't shut your mouth off, because if I did, it would not be good.
But that's a beautiful, you know, as many things as we say in our relationships, as you started off so eloquently saying, there's many things that we would love and desire in our relationship, right, Couture? And I'm sure, Phil, you would desire it too in your relationship with her. And Don, I know you desire, well, no, actually, Laura desires a lot from you, and you're just happy to be married.
I was just going to say with shooting out the mouth, I stick my foot in my mouth so much with my wife and family that I have athlete's tongue.
But here's the beauty, and I think maybe we're coming up on an hour, and we haven't finished the first chapter, but we can work at it, and I think it's more about the conversation than it is about getting through everything in it, if I'm right, and I think this has been a great conversation because it's helped highlight the desires we have, you know, men and women, we desire to be what our spouses need, we do. We desire to work together, and it's not working, but that doesn't mean that the desire still isn't there. And that doesn't mean that there aren't still very beautiful things to this thing called marriage and beautiful things to this wonderful gift that God created when he said, okay, man, it's not good for you to be alone. And the animals I created aren't going to fill that void. And so instead we give you this wonderful creation who is going to be of your same bone, who's going to walk with you. That's a kind of a beautiful thing. That is a beautiful thing. Any other comments on this before we kind of make our way to the exit point?
Well, I don't know. Really quick, there was this comment that was told to me when we got married. The first 20 years, it's all about him. The second 20 years is all about you. The last 20 years is about each other. I always thought that was interesting. Yeah, I don't know if it's true because we're only going on, 12 years? But
well, it's still all about you, Phil, so don't worry.
I know. Crazy.
I've got a question because I'm so used to sticking my foot in my mouth. That comment you made about the animals, you know, aren't good enough so I can tell my wife that I'm better than the beagle?
Yes, you can tell her. I don't think she'll agree.
I'm just asking. So you're basically telling me don't go there?
You know, I am, at least wait until the COVID scare is over so I can come out and do your funeral. But this is the joy that we have. I want to say thank you to our guests, of course, Keturah, Phil. We invite you to enjoy or come back for our conversation next week. I'm pretty sure we're still going to be under COVID restrictions, and so I can guarantee Phil's going to have the time. But I don't know. Keturah might not. She might be wondering why Phil isn't seeing things that need to be done around the house and spending time doing that. But I'd like to invite you guys back to join us officially for that conversation. Don, you are always invited. I mean, I know I'm the handsomer of the two of us, but man, you bring a sense of humor.
Not much.
I know it's not.
Yeah.
But social distancing makes it a lot better. So.
Yeah. You do look better farther away.
And so with that, my dear listeners, we wish you God's richest blessings as you are dealing with the COVID lockdown. Stay healthy, stay well, and stay centered on Jesus Christ, and use the resources your church are providing to help grow closer to Him and stay in touch with others through these means and through these conversations. And so unless there's anything else, I think we've reached the end. Until next week.
Thanks. All right.
We'll see ya.